Hi, I'm Tedra Meyer, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Today, we're taking a look at Vermont's court system, specifically how pandemic-era changes continue to affect how justice is being served. In 2020, the state rolled out a new system for filing cases electronically. It's caused some major issues, like errors that keep people in prison longer than they should be. And like many of us, lawyers are struggling with remote or hybrid work. Representing a client when you're on a video call in your kitchen just isn't the same as standing there next to them in court. Lawyers we've talked to say they're feeling less effective, more frustrated, and frankly, burned out. Later in the hour, we'll be joined by the state's court administrator and a deputy state's attorney. But first, we're joined in the studio today by Kelly Green from Randolph. She's a defense attorney in the state's Defender General's office in Montpelier, and she's been struggling with how the system she's a part of is failing some lawyers and their clients. Kelly, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
And listeners, we would love for you to join the conversation at this hour, particularly if you are a lawyer experiencing burnout. Have you been contemplating a career change? What have your experiences been over the past couple of years? Give us a call, 800-639-2211. You can also tweet to us at Vermont Edition or send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So, Kelly, first, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How long have you been practicing law in Vermont?
I've been a licensed attorney in Vermont since 2005. I live in Randolph. Hello to everybody in Randolph. And I do criminal defense, so I'm a trial attorney, and I represent people charged with crimes across the state. I practice in all the different courtrooms, too.
And how many cases do you typically work on at one time?
I have an interesting caseload. So I typically work on 12 to 15 serious cases at a time. And then maybe I have a docket of less serious cases. Mm-hmm. I've worked in the prisoner's rights office for a long time. About 10 years, and represented prisoners in a whole bunch of different types of claims. And that was a very high volume practice. So I would have scores or 100 or 150 cases at a time or more. You know, that was just a very, very high volume.
150 practice. Cases at a time.
Yeah.
That sounds impossible to manage.
It's hard to manage, not impossible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But busy.
Yeah.
You know, you're hopping.
Yes, yeah. I can imagine.
And things come up, you know, sometimes, you know, a case comes to the forefront and then you have work to do and focus on a case. And then maybe it's under advisement and, you know, there's nothing you can do more on the case. And so you can focus on something else. So we all juggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've had you on today, Kelly, to help us talk through some of the major challenges facing the court system, facing lawyers and their clients today. But first, before we get into that, I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about why your job is important to you, maybe a client or a case or an experience that you've had as a lawyer here in the state that, you know, helps you keep doing what you do every day.
There's not one particular client. I have great clients. I love my clients. And that's exactly why I get up and come to work every day is because, you know, I represent people charged with serious crimes. And so when you come for the first time face to face with someone who is in serious trouble and reaches out and they just need your help, you tend to bond with them, right? Any this is human nature. If you come across a motorist on the side of the road and they need help, you when and they ask you for help, you help them and you bond. And so I have a strong bond with my clients. I also work with really great attorneys and who keep me laughing. And you have to keep laughing because it can get really grim.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those more difficult aspects then. Now, as we mentioned at the top of the show, in early 2020, right around the start of the pandemic, the state made some pretty big changes to how cases are filed and how they work their way through the court system, to kind of put it simply. And remote hearings became more prevalent. Lawyers began filing cases electronically instead of in person. And you know, from a distance, the system seems like, you know, it could be a positive. It sounds like it's probably, you know, going to be a bit more efficient. But instead, it sounds like from a lot that we've heard that it's been rife with a lot of issues. I'm wondering if you could begin to talk us through that. Perhaps there's like one case that you could use to help us understand what's been so difficult about these changes.
Well, first of all, I have to say, everybody who's listening knows change is hard. And I am trying to be a person who loves change and is excited by change. But it's hard. And so the judiciary has been working to, my word, automate a lot of our processes. And some of my colleagues will point out that there's a lot of good things about automating processes, and so we have to try to figure out what works and what doesn't work. Well, mm-hmm. I'll tell you what didn't work.
Please.
So, right, in January of this year, I represented this man who is in prison, and a judge. I had a little trial, and a judge ordered that he be released at the DOC's first opportunity. So I won his case, and the judge wrote an entry order, which is a decision, and said, release this man at your first opportunity. Well, the new software system that the judiciary is using failed to send me that decision, and it didn't send the Department of Corrections the decision. It didn't send anyone the decision at all.
So this decision was made, but it was just sort of shouted into the ether.
Shouted into the ether. And so because I don't trust the software, I am constantly going through my cases. I'm like hyper-vigilant. I've been going through my cases and checking online to see if anything happened in cases just in case I miss something. That's mm-hmm. kind of like the nature of what, for me, how I've experienced this software change. It's like I have to double-check and triple-check, and I'm constantly checking. So I was trolling through the records, and I found this decision 9 days after it was issued. So 9 days had gone by, and I was like, I found the decision. So I called my lovely court clerk mm-hmm. In Washington Civil, Donna Waters, if you're listening, you're a star. And she was like, no, we sent that to you. And so I called my opponent in the Department of Corrections, and he hadn't received it either. Mm. So the software had indicated that it had been sent, but it had not been sent. Mm. So Donna did some research. She went back. She's really like a really good at this stuff. So she went back and she discovered that it had not been sent. And in pursuing why, and I don't know the backstory of why it didn't get sent, she discovered, or the judiciary discovered, that 700 other orders had not been sent to lawyers all around the state.
Oh, wow.
But in my case, I'm like, I don't know what those 700 opinions were about, but mine was important, you know, because this was a thing that said, release a man from prison right away. And lucky I was going crazy looking through the records and, you know, following up.
So this man, just to drive this home, this client of yours spent 9 extra days in prison because of this technical glitch.
Yeah. And we couldn't get the ball rolling, in other words, on his release until we knew that I had the order and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, software.
Well, listeners, if you're just tuning in, we are discussing Vermont's court systems and recent changes to how cases are filed that have led to delays in justice being served. We're joined on the line right now by Kelly Green, a defense attorney in Montpelier. If you have stories to share, give us a call, 800-639-2211. Let's go now to Rosie in St. Albans. Rosie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Rosie Chase, and I'm a public defender up here in Franklin County. And I'm calling in just to say that I'm feeling apathetic for the first time in my career about the work that I'm doing. I've been working as a public defender in Vermont for 12 years, a little less than Kelly. And I don't want to be a burnt out public defender. I witness burnout all the time in this profession, and I don't want to be like that. But I feel like the pandemic has brought me to a tipping point in my career. And I have the highest caseload of all time. I'm finding an inability to get much of my work done for the benefit of my clients because I have so many cases. And then you just feel further sort of, you know, concerned about the state of the judiciary when they're not they weren't following the state health care guidance as it related to the reopening of the courts. And this summer, we've been experiencing the overwhelming wave of the reopening, the torrent of the backlog of cases. And I'm just really concerned about the criminal defense bar in this state. I don't want to lose all of the great talent that we have, but I'm really worried about the state of our profession right now.
Well, Rosie, thank you so much for your call. And I'm sorry to hear what you're going through. I know public defenders serve such a great and higher purpose in every state in the country, especially here in Vermont. Are you, Kelly, also hearing stories of fellow lawyers kind of wrestling with the same sense of burnout that Rosie is?
Absolutely. I went to a training that my agency put on. It was so nice. It was outdoors at a state park, and we had a, you know, where we could talk. And yeah, this is the talk. There's because of the pandemic, there's been a massive backlog of cases. Courts were closed for a very, very long time. And exactly what Rosie is saying is that the courts have reopened and there's a rush to get things done. So I personally this summer had two major back-to-back trials, one after the other. And I worked every single day in July. I work, you know, and plus, you know, every Saturday in June. I just worked and worked and worked and worked to get these cases done. And it was super stressful, really hard to do. I did it. I'm proud of myself. But I don't want to do it again. So that's happening.
Right. Well, I want to bring in one more guest into this conversation. Alfonso Villegas is the deputy state's attorney in Washington County, and he lives in Barrie. Alfonso, welcome to the show, and thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on here.
Alfonso, I have lots of questions for you about what it means to be a deputy state's attorney, the kinds of cases you're seeing. But first, since we're talking here about burnout. I'm wondering if you've been listening and kind of empathizing or connecting with what Kelly and what our caller Rosie have been saying about burnout and the onslaught of cases that lawyers are trying to work through right now.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with everything that Attorney Green has said and Attorney Chase. I think they're the share of burnout, the share of feeling overworked, of carrying a large amount of cases is real. And that's it's rife throughout the entire state, and not just Vermont, throughout the entire country. Other states are also struggling with ensuring that they have a sufficient amount of attorneys in order to provide justice to people, to litigants, people that are charged with crimes, or people that are seeking redress for harms that they've encountered. A big challenge that Vermont is dealing in particular is an aging bar. So you have the large amounts of cases that existed, that the big backlog as a result of the pandemic, but there were also a large amount of cases that existed before the pandemic. And then you have to add in the variable of an aging bar, attorneys retiring, and that makes it even more difficult, and attracting new young attorneys to fill those gaps has been challenging.
And Alfonso, I asked the same question of Kelly, but before we continue to dive into the challenges and the difficult aspects facing lawyers and their clients, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what draws you to this profession, and what keeps you going every day.
Sure. Well, I am originally from South Florida, and I came to Vermont with the intent of not. I came to Vermont Law School. I did not have the intent of studying criminal law, but I ended up really enjoying it in law school. I interned in Rutland County at the state's attorney's office there, and I very much became enamored with the profession, not just of law, but of criminal law. Why I became a prosecutor, I describe it as it's easy to be a tourist. I was just in Montreal the other day, and I saw some really nice buildings and statues, and I ate some really great food. And I come away with the feeling of like, wow, I really love Montreal. But the reality is I don't really know what it's like to live in Montreal. I don't really know what the community is like. I don't know what the struggles are. In Rutland, I saw, to me as an outsider, someone from Florida, I saw a really lovely city, beautiful buildings, good history, interesting people. But through the state's attorney's office, I saw where the community was really struggling. And you saw individuals through the Project Vision. You saw people in the prosecutor's office and law enforcement, first responders, fire departments, and then just community members that got together on a monthly basis to discuss, you know, where things are struggling, but not in a way to complain, but as a way to support each other and to improve the community. And what I was struck by was these individuals see the community at its worst, but they still have a deep love for the community and want to see it grow and improve. And that's what drew me to being a prosecutor.
And we have to take a break in one moment. But before we do, Alfonso, Kelly here was telling us a bit about the rollout of this new e-filing system, which sounds like, you know, something a lot of us have had to deal with in our many, you know, in whatever career that you have over the past 2 years. Things have really moved online in a way that they hadn't quite as quickly in years prior to the pandemic. But can you tell us a bit about what your experience with it has been?
Sure. I agree. I think the judiciary is trying to find a system that works best for them, and I guess also for the rest of the state. But I think that there definitely have been a lot of challenges with the implementation of the program. I think the biggest complaint that the bar has in general is they were not sufficiently transparent with the process. And there was a communication breakdown. Vermont is a small state, and we have the attorneys have generally a close relationship with the judiciary, but the implementation of the new program created a lot of friction there that's been unfortunate. And as a new system, I think there's a number of deficiencies. If it's a record-keeping system that is supposed to help cases move through the judiciary, help individuals keep track of their cases and get justice, I think that there is a large number of issues that need to be resolved. With our office, the old way of filing cases changed. A lot of the filing used to be done by our office. So as a prosecutor, as the prosecuting office, we would generate a case, create a paper file, deliver it to the court. Court clerks would then manually input all that information into their old system, and then we would move forward from that. And then we would provide discovery or case packets to the defense. The new system, a lot of that is now automated. We create a new file, we create a new case in the Odyssey program. And so what the clerks, it saved up a lot of front end work for clerks, but unfortunately, it's also created a lot of back end work for clerks on how cases or decisions are sent out. As Attorney Green was saying, sometimes orders get missed. And it pushed a lot of the filing work back onto attorneys' offices to get those things done. And it's created log jams in other places that I don't think were foreseen beforehand.
I also want to add one more voice into this conversation. Terry Corsones is Vermont's state court administrator. She was named to the position in May. Terry, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much, Michaela.
And Terry, I think I should also note you were named to this position in May, but you have decades of experience in the judicial system in Vermont. I don't know if I've ever had a guest on the show who all of our other guests and everyone we've talked to has spoken so highly of. So we appreciate you joining us. Now, before the break, we were discussing this new e-filing system and the effect that it's having not just on how cases are processed, but just on the face-to-face interactions that people have while they're working their way through the court system. And Kelly, I'm wondering if you could jump in here, because I saw you nodding here in the studio as we were talking right before the break. What are you feeling in our conversation so far? What's being left out?
Yeah, so, I mean, Odyssey is a software program. It has a lot of benefits, too, which we haven't talked about, but it can be convenient to use. Also, it's nice to be able to file things in the middle of the night. You know, you don't need stamps. There's benefits, but I guess what I want to know, what's on my mind is like, what by having courts being closed, by automating filing systems. We have a call center now. You can no longer just pick up the phone and call your local court clerk. You call this call center, and they direct calls. And by using WebEx to hold hearings and so on and so forth, are we losing the human connections that seem to me to be so important to the functioning of the judiciary? So, and getting justice. So, you know, gone are the days when I go to court, even just for a 5-minute status. You know, I walk down the street in Montpelier. Washington Civil has been closed for a few years now. Go inside, say hello to people, talk to the court officer. I had this really large network of what I call, what everybody calls, weak tie relationships with people that are known to be good for your mental health and a good way to learn new information and keep your brain flexible. And a lot of that is lost at this time. And I just want to make sure that the judiciary is thinking about those bigger concepts. It's not really just about like, how do we file cases or how do we, you know, how are cases uploaded and downloaded? It's like, are we consciously taking that into consideration? What are our traditions here in this state? What do our connections with each other matter? Maybe they don't. maybe the convenience of WebEx is great, but I've seen it. I've seen some terrible things happen. Mm. I was looking at the WebEx, watching court in Caledonia Criminal Division, and there was a man charged with a crime, and he was sitting alone at the table. There was not a single lawyer in the room. The defendant had come to court in person, and the prosecutor wasn't there, the defense attorney wasn't there, and nor was the judge. They were all on the WebEx screen, and this guy's sitting there by himself at the table. The prosecutor has her camera turned off, so she's just a black square, and she's talking, and they're deciding this man's fate. Mm. And maybe I am crazy. There's some evidence of that, but I just wonder, what are we losing, if anything? Are we even examining that? That's the real question. Are we even taking that into consideration when we're making these things? Mm. I miss my court clerks.
Mm. Well, State Court Administrator Terry Corsones, I'd love to get your response to what Kelly Green is describing here. Do you think that we're losing something by this move towards more, you know, work done online within the court system?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to comment. And Kelly, these are great questions. I wanted to, first of all, though, say if it's okay, I just wanted to thank so much Kelly and Rosie and Alfonso for their public service. You mentioned I was named in May. I actually started July 1. Mm-hmm. So I apologize in advance to not probably know the answers to all the questions that have been asked. But I wanted to just share knowing how hard attorney work is in general, in the best of times, and knowing also the incredible challenges that attorneys have had to face during the last 2.5 years in particular, between the pandemic, between the new case management system and e-filing system, between having to pivot to remote hearings and adjusting everything that they had to adjust to ensure that court operations could happen during this time. So I can't say enough how grateful we are to the bar for their dedication and their cooperation and their collaboration during this, because there's no way the courts could have operated without their dedication. And in the points that you have been raising, I understand and empathize with completely. But I just wanted to first just express gratitude to them, especially in the type of work that they do. I mean, it's tough in the best of times, and it definitely has not been the best of times. But in answer to Kelly's points about whether or not the court is taking into consideration the human connections that are lost if you have, you know, fewer opportunities to interact in person, we're definitely at a juncture where hopefully we can put a lot of things in the rearview mirror, if you will. We did have basically the end of AO49, most of it ending as of just a couple of days ago, September 6th. And the court is definitely looking to.
I'm sorry to jump in here, Terry. I just want to make sure our listeners understand what AO49 is. That was an executive order, essentially, that kind of at least temporarily codified some of these changes around remote hearings and e-filings. Is that right?
That's right. That's a very good description. And I apologize, you're right. Who would know what AO49 was otherwise? it was basically a set of processes and procedures that the judiciary put into effect during the pandemic in order to adapt to, for example, primarily and initially the governor's emergency orders, you know, that didn't allow, the in-person interaction. So it was something that had been amended over the past couple of years. And we have, as you said, we have made permanent some of the rules that ended up being very beneficial, allowing people to email instead of, you know, having to mail or hand deliver filings, for example. In remote hearings in general, it allowed us to at least operate. And there are, advantages as Kelly and Alfonso and Rosie pointed out, primarily kind of convenience. People who have transportation issues, don't have to worry about that. They could take less time off from work, for example. It was also some cases you might have parties who aren't supposed to have contact with one another, so it would allow them to participate without having to, worry about that aspect of it. It also, in many senses, increased access to justice because attorneys who would have been limited by geography or distance had the ability to represent many more people, for example, in remote parts of the state. They could connect with them, remotely when that might not have been possible otherwise. On the other hand, the disadvantages of remote hearings, you lose that in-person, connection. Determining credibility, the ability to cross-examine witnesses. If you have exhibits involved in a hearing, it makes it much more cumbersome. And you lose kind of that opportunity. A lot of times cases can be settled or resolved or partially resolved if you're in person when you can't do it as easily remotely. So what the court is doing right now at this juncture is looking at what makes sense. What is the right balance? How can we use what now are tools that we didn't have before? It has been kind of a silver lining, I think, of the pandemic that we certainly received a lot of funding that enabled us to put into place all the equipment that allowed for remote hearings that I doubt that we would ever have been in that position otherwise. So now it's an option, and we do want to look at what would make the most sense. There was a survey that went out to the bar about remote hearings in particular, and we had a great response. Over 400 persons responded, over 1,300 comments. So they're assimilating all those comments, presenting it to the court for the court to ideally come up with, again, what works best? How can we take advantage of these benefits, but also not have complete remote, acknowledging that in-person hearings are far better in certain circumstances, identifying which cases that would be, which circumstances. And we really rely on the bar's input to help guide that discussion. But Kelly, you're exactly right. I mean, the human connection is something that's critical to Vermont's historical court operations and in the future. And I think that's one of the things that makes Vermont special. You know, we can walk down the street and interact. And Kelly, I want you to know that Washington County Courthouse is open. And I know that the courts are looking at, what hearings can be held in person. You know, what is the right balance? I think most judges, we just had a change of term, Michaela, where there were judges rotated to different courts, and typically they have bench bars in the beginning of the term. to meet with the local bar. I attended one yesterday, actually in Rutland, where we did it in person, but we had the WebEx option. So we had, you know, good crowd in person, and then people who connected as well to ask questions. And the new incoming judicial officers all talked about what they plan for their courtrooms in terms of in person versus remote, you know, getting feedback.
Well, it sounds, Terry, I want to jump in here because it sounds like there are so many changes in the works to this system. I want to give Alfonso Villegas a moment to respond, Deputy State's Attorney in Washington County. Alfonso, hearing Terry Corsones describe the acknowledged difficulties about Odyssey, the system that you use, and you know, the move towards remote hearings, but some of the changes they're hoping to implement, how does that all sit with you?
So there are definitely some benefits to having remote work. So I agree with Terry that having, for example, there are some people that have a public defender as a conflict counsel. So that means that the public defenders, the typical public defender in a county, cannot represent a particular defendant. So a conflict attorney needs to be found. And sometimes they have a contract with the Defender General's office, and they might operate in more than one county. So before Odyssey, before the pandemic, these individuals would have to drive, let's say, from Newport, the court in Newport, all the way down to Barrie, and then maybe a hearing, random hearing, and all the way down in Windham. And that's a lot of driving. That's a lot of dead time that they could have been better used working on clients for other cases. And then sometimes when they show up to that hearing in Windham County, the client isn't even there. So it's kind of like a wasted trip. That was no longer the case, at least during the pandemic, because courts were closed, but it had saved up a lot of time that was otherwise wasted so that attorneys could actually focus on the work that needed to get done. But I absolutely agree with Attorney Green that there has been a loss of human connection with when it comes to conducting hearings, at least with criminal hearings. So here's an example. During the pandemic, and so I absolutely recognize that the pivot to online hearings, like the rest of the world, to online hearings or online schooling was a way to at least keep some court processes working. And we're internally grateful for the what the judiciary implemented, ensuring people's safety, but also making sure that there was at least some modicum of justice still being conducted. But for example, I think a lot of the solemnity of what is gained from criminal hearings was lost through remote hearings. So you have, I did a sentencing for an individual, and so they're changing their plea. The courtroom is the people's cathedral. And so you have individuals who have harmed either an individual, a victim, or the community. And this is they come to court because this is what the community has said, that this is how we're going to address these wrongs. It's an opportunity for individuals to accept responsibility for something that they've done when they are changing their plea, to make amends with the community, to receive a sentence for victims, if it was a victim case, to hear a defendant say, yes, I did do this, I plead guilty. The facts are read, individuals acknowledge individual elements to an offense. And it is an important and sacred process that is incredibly important for our democratic system of government. What's not the same is during a remote hearing, you have an individual who is changing their plea and they're in their living room, they have the TV on, they're having a side conversation with someone. The judge is, we have your typical WebEx or remote software troubles. You need, as a matter of law, to have people's pleas be voluntary, knowing that they know what they're pleading guilty to. And so the judge has to have a conversation with them, and they're distracted and they're not paying attention. And their defense attorney is in another room and they're in back home. And this particular hearing, the judge had to be like, you know, Mr. So-and-so, do you understand that, you know, you were driving a vehicle? What? And they would respond like, with what? Oh, wait, sorry. Yeah, no, I was distracted. Yeah, I was driving a vehicle. Mm. And that's, you know, they're, let's say they're pleading guilty to a DUI. You know, that impacts the community, could have impacted others. And the seriousness, the solemnity of what's going on with criminal rights, they're agreeing to limit their liberties as a citizen and accept a punishment, it's kind of taken away through not being there in person. Mm. So I think that's definitely part of the connection that's lost.
Mm. Well, we have one listener who's been waiting patiently on the line, Elizabeth in Woodstock. Elizabeth, what are your thoughts listening to this conversation?
Hi, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Kruska. I am an attorney. I'm based in Woodstock. And I know Kelly, I know Alfonso, I know Terry all quite well. I was the president-elect of the Vermont Bar Association when Odyssey rolled out, and then I was the president of the Vermont Bar Association during the rollout, and right now I'm the immediate past president. So I come to this with a couple different thoughts because I had a chance to see the Odyssey rollout. I was on committees about the Odyssey rollout. And first of all, I have to say, I want to echo what Rosie said. I also am, I'm tired. Lawyers are tired. This has been really hard for all of us. But I also want to recognize the fact that we had a really odd circumstance with the pandemic, and we had to, as a bar and as a system of justice, we had to learn how to move very quickly and to be very nimble to change the way that we practice so that we could continue moving cases forward. I do a lot of criminal defense work and I do a lot of juvenile defense work as well. And our cases never stopped. And so we kept going and we had to figure out how to do it really quickly. In 2017, 2018, 2019, I was driving all over the state. I think I drove probably 30,000 miles a year going to different court hearings and participating in court hearings. And now that we have switched a lot of our hearings to remote hearings, I'm not driving so much. And as Terry pointed out, it has really increased the access to justice that people are seeing. At one point last winter, I had cases pending in 8 courts across the county, including in one court that I would never normally take a case in because it's just so far away. But I was able to help and I was able to represent some people who needed help and didn't have access to an attorney for various reasons. Mm. And I think that's really important. I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of that.
Well, Elizabeth, thanks so much for sharing. And I'd like our guests to respond in just a moment, but we do have to take a short break here. Now, during the break, Kelly, you just told me a short story that I think really illustrates the lack of face-to-face interaction that you've really been missing being part of the judicial system here in Vermont. I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners.
I actually had a really excellent experience last week. I was up in Newport for maybe 2 weeks ago. I was up in Newport and I had a very stressful all-day hearing. I went out into the hallway like looking stressed out. And the marvelous clerk up there, Julie Bronson, looked at me and said, Do you want a cookie? She said, I was like, yeah, I kind of do. She said, well, you know, Terry Corsones was here and she brought these cookies that she had baked and they're just, you got to have one. And I think that will help you with the rest of your case.
Did it help?
Well, heck yeah.
Well, Terry Corsones, Vermont's state court administrator, other than baking delicious cookies, could you tell us one of your priorities now that you have this new role that you've only been in for a couple of months? What's priority number one for you for addressing some of the concerns we've been discussing this hour?
Well, thank you for asking me, Kelly. And Kelly, thank you for sharing that story. That is so funny. And Kelly, I'm at the Supreme Court building and I have cookies today if you want to stop by.
I'll be there.
Okay. My number one priority, and I said this when I was interviewing and I've said it to everybody who can stand to listen to me since assuming the role, but is to support for the court administrator's office to support the courts. to me, what happens in the courtrooms and what happens in the courthouses is completely critical and integral to the judiciary's mission of administering justice and preserving the rule of law. And I want to make sure that everything, every resource is dedicated to assisting and supporting the court staff and the judges. And that means the divisions include, for example, the tech division, tech support services, the finance division, court operations, of course. But that's my number one priority. And that necessarily means supporting court users, of which the bar is a huge component. So that's my priority. We're looking at everything. We're looking at the budget. We're looking at every aspect to say, how can we best support what's happening in the courts and in the courthouses? So whether it has to do with e-filing, and Elizabeth Kruska, it was great that she called in, because Elizabeth actually also chairs, and a big shout out to Alfonso too. He serves on the Vermont Bar Association board. He's made tremendous contributions to the bar, to the profession. They are so selfless in their dedication. Elizabeth serves as chair of the Court Users Group, which is a group that was set up specifically to inform in terms of improvements to Odyssey. And we just barely implemented what's called a change advisory board that's basically designed to bring about Odyssey improvements. And the Court Users Group was named specifically as a consultative group to that board to make sure that whatever lawyers and court staff and law office staff find could be improvements, could be problems, could be, you know, issues, to channel them so that we can ideally then make changes to make improvements. So I wanted to just mention that's happening as kind of one example. In terms of the remote hearings, Alfonso mentioned sentencing. That bar survey that I mentioned talked about different type hearings in the different divisions. And for sentencing, in response to should the following criminal hearings be conducted remotely, and for sentencing hearings, 73% of the respondents said, no, it should be in person, or it should be in person absent special circumstances. Mm. So you can bet that when you have 73% saying it, that's gonna impact, Alfonso, kind of what the standard would be for a sentencing hearing. So that's more input we need to make sure that the in-person hearings are held, and especially when they're most needed.
And ahead of today's show, we received a couple of emails, some of which touched on the issue of remote hearings. Kate writes, I practice criminal defense in Vermont, and in all frankness, I love WebEx. I love that I don't have to brave the weather to go to court. I love that my footwear doesn't have to be professional. But all in all, I have to admit to myself that it probably is not best for my clients. I fear that overall it contributes to the dehumanization of people charged with crimes, especially indigent people. We received another email from Bryce in Stowe, who writes, the combination of inadequate funding for the courts and public defense in Vermont leaves vulnerable Vermonters in limbo, often waiting over 3 years to resolve criminal matters. We need more judges and a better system for compensating attorneys who can't handle cases when the public defenders have a conflict of interest. The state should provide adequate funding for significantly more trials than are possible under the current system, because justice delayed is justice denied. And I want to bring in one more caller. Eric in Clarendon is on the line. Eric, what's your question or your comment?
I am a juvenile practitioner only at this point in my career. And that being said, we have sort of a different point of view in the juvie world, in that I am now able to appear in three different courts in one day, for instance. But just as importantly, juvenile cases were always supposed to be confidential. And that just wasn't happening when we were in person in court. Everybody was out in the hall talking with each other. The second point is that we were also bringing adversarial parties into the same physical space, very often in front of impressionable children. Mm. The most important part is that now that everything is remote, there is a much higher percentage of parental participation in hearings. Mm. So we are all for leaving juvenile hearings, at least the uncontested juvenile hearings, the normal juvenile hearings, remote.
Well, thanks for that perspective from the juvenile perspective, Eric. Unfortunately, this hour has flown by. We only have a couple of minutes left. I want to get just a parting thought from each of our guests. Kelly Green, you know, now that we've been discussing these issues for the last nearly an hour, you know, I know you've been experiencing some fatigue and some burnout yourself. What's one thing that you are hopeful for, one change that would keep you doing this work that you do?
Oh gosh, one change, huh? In a short amount of time.
Yeah.
I would like the judiciary to list the WebEx links for each courtroom on their website so that every lawyer can have access to those links at all times, and that so can the public.
Mm.
Because just today I received 10 separate emails from people looking from the link from Rutland, and so this morning. So anyway, I just make sure you're including the public in these things.
Thank you. Kelly Green, thank you so much for your time today and for helping us talk through this complicated series of issues. Alfonso Villegas, same question to you. Is there one change that you're hoping the courts can implement?
Well, I would agree with Attorney Green. That's a great recommendation. But my to come up with, I guess, a new one, a better or more accurate reflection of case notes or case status in Odyssey. There's a disparity in what records are available. So as a user of Odyssey, if I'm looking at what has been going on in a case in Washington County, the public portal is not as helpful as a tool. But if I compare it to what's available, what I could see, let's say, in the case going on in Chittenden County, the notes are much more extensive. And I don't entirely think that it's a staffing issue. I just think it's a matter of practice that can be improved. And I think that would make this Odyssey as a record system much more effective, especially for a conflict counsel that ends up getting a new client on an old case. I think it'll make it a lot helpful for them.
Alfonso Villegas is the Deputy State's Attorney in Washington County. Alfonso, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Terry Corsones is Vermont's State Court Administrator. Terry, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to get your last word in there, but thank you so much for your time and your expertise as well.
Thank you so much. This has been so helpful, and I really appreciate all the input.
And again, Kelly Green is a defense attorney in the state's Defender General's Office in Montpelier. Thank you, Kelly. And one last special thank you to Erica Heilman, who suggested the topic for this show and helped us get the word out. Today's show was directed by James Stewart and produced by Tedra Meyer. We had production assistance from Rick Barrett, and our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.